Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Okay, I'm not going to, because it's a codicil, I'm not going to touch it. That's okay. What verse? I'm sorry, I just did. 41. There's no purport. Is that the one?
So in 2 days we did like.
Okay.
10 verses?
Doesn't sound right. Yes, please. Okay, but okay, I have no idea. Vrindavanam Govardhanam, yes. So that's the last one. I did the one before that. We did that one too? 41, okay, that's it. Kadachid Yamuna Tire. Vatsam charayato svakai vayasyai krishna balayor jigam sur daitya agamat kadachid yamuna tire Vatsam charayato svakai vayasyai krishna balayor jigam sur daitya agamat kadachid yamuna tire Kadachit. Sometimes. Yamuna Tire. On the bank of the Yamuna. Vatsan. The calves. Charayato. When they were tending. Swakaihi. Their own. Vayasyai, with other playmates. Krishna Balayo, both Krishna and Balaram. Jigamsu,
desiring to kill them.
Daityaha, another demon. Agamat, reached there. Translation. By Srila Prabhupada. One day, while Rama and Krishna, along with their playmates, were tending the calves on the bank of the river Yamuna, another demon arrived there, desiring to kill them. Okay, no purport. I'll read the next verse. Tam vatsarupinam vikshya vatsayuta gatam harihi Darshayan Baladevaya Shanayar Mugdha Ivasadat. When the Supreme Personality of Godhead saw that the demon had assumed the form of a calf and entered among the groups of other calves, he pointed out to Baladev, "Here is another demon." Then he very slowly approached the demon, as if he did not understand the demon's intentions. Purport. The import of the word Mugdha Iva is that although Krishna knew everything, here he pretended that he did not understand why the demon had entered among the calves. And he informed Baladev by a sign. These are very wonderful pastimes. There are apparent contradictions here.
But that is what makes the relishable flavor of Krishna's leelas. Chamatkar, amazement, is created when things that shouldn't happen or that you don't expect, when they happen. Krishna kills so many demons. But does that include killing a calf? You know, that's sinful. And later he kills a bull, a Vrishtasura. He has to atone for that. The gopis make him excavate Radha Kunda as atonement for killing a Vrishtasura. So Krishna is doing what looks like a very sinful activity, kill a young cow. And now he's pretending that he doesn't even know what this demon, or that this is a demon, and what his intentions are. He's pretending not to know. We're very fortunate to be allowed some insight, some understanding of these amazing activities of the Supreme Lord. It's rare enough that a conditioned soul can understand anything about God as a person. God as the creator of this world. Why does God create this world? Is a big question. And then what is his involvement in it? Whose fault is it? Is it his fault or our fault that this imperfect world where there is suffering and where there is injustice and evil? So who is to blame for that injustice, evil, and inequality? Is it God's fault? Or do we have to take the blame on ourselves? These are big questions that people don't know the answers to generally. What to speak of the realm of transcendental activities of the Supreme Lord, just the mundane business of his creating this material world for us, is so puzzling. How can we even understand that God has any other business than making this world for us and baking our daily bread? How can we even understand that he has any other activities of his own? That he's a real person. He's not just our order supplier. But he's got his own life. To even understand that is a transcendental leap of understanding that most people are incapable of making. How can someone make that quantum leap of spiritual understanding to be able to appreciate that God is really a person, with a life of his own? Shushusho Shradhanasya Vasudeva Kataruchi Sian Mohat Sevaya Vipra Punyatirtanishevanat. Two basic qualifications. Shushushu Shradhana. A person who has these two qualifications, he might. There are even additional qualifications, but those are the two basic ones. He might be able to understand Krishna as a person. Vasudeva kata ruchi chat. He might, this is potential. It's not bhavishyati, but chat, maybe. No guarantee, even if these two conditions are met. And what do you get? Vasudeva kata ruchi. A taste for hearing the description of the personality and activities of Vasudeva. When we use the term Vasudeva, we're referring to Bhagavan, the personality of Godhead. Not his localized form of super soul in our heart, who has no other business than to take care of us, like a babysitter who's paid. I don't know what they pay a babysitter in the United States now. It used to be $3.50 an hour. So a babysitter gets paid for watching the baby, the children. So the super soul is just a big babysitter. That's his business. That's what he gets paid for. That's only partial aspect of Bhagavan. What does speak of Brahman, impersonalized feature? The real person the person who of whom Paramatma and Bhagavan are just reflections or aspects, he's not easily understood. If you are, you can gain an attraction to hearing about Vasudeva, the Supreme Truth as he is in his full personal glory, the glorious Supreme Personality of Godhead, with his beauty, with his form, with his all the qualities of his personality, all his activities, and so many devotees. Even if you are focused in your attention only on one form of the personality of Godhead, even a minor form, even a form that's not very famous. You know, Lord Vibhu, one of the Manvantaras, what did he do? I don't know, something's mentioned in the Bhagavatam, maybe nothing, just his name. Maybe you're a devotee of Lord Vibhu, the Manvantara, in the I think the Swayambhuva Manvantara, Manvantara avatar. He did something to help Indra in the first Manvantara. And maybe you're his devotee, and that's all you ever meditate on, is his glorious activities. That's enough. That will fill your heart with ecstasy and fill your mind with so many thoughts. Even just to focus on any of the Narayana Kala, any of the self-same expansions of Narayana, even the least important one, the least glorious, the least famous one, is a complete meditation. It fully engages your heart and your mind. Nobody, no jiva can know everything about all the aspects of God's personality. That's impossible. Yes, yeah, about... samavasyati nasya param. Shesho danabhi samavasyati nasya param. With 10,000 heads, Ananta Shesha is trying to chant all the glories of his Lord. And he's been doing it for thousands of years. He can't reach the end of it. Nobody can, what to speak of, chant or even know or think about, conceive of the extent, by multiple dimensions, infinite glories of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in all of his expansions. Nobody can, no jiva especially, can hope to ever comprehend all of that. Even to just have your one Ishtadeva, your one form of the Lord that you worship, just meditating on him is a complete samadhi, complete spiritual life, completely satisfying. But how do you reach even that perfect state of samadhi, of worship of the Lord in one of his Narayana Kala expansion forms, and to be fully absorbed in thought of him? Shru shru shrop shodadanasya. You can become attracted to the first step in the procedure of getting a taste for hearing about him. It's the first and the most crucial. It must come first, but once you have it, and you have it in a solid way, then your success is guaranteed. To have a taste for hearing about Vasudeva. And how do you get that attraction, that taste? Shru 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 shodadanasya. And then Mahatseva, I guess three qualifications. Shushushu literally means it's the desiderative adjective. Oh, what is the suffix? Uch or something? Oh, what is pratyaya? Shushushu. Yeah. Anyway, being desirous of hearing, wanting to hear. But it has a secondary meaning, by convention, wanting to serve. And the two ideas go together. Someone who wants to hear spiritual matters, because people want to hear garbage matters, that's different. They want to hear what's in the newspaper, what's on the gossip columns. You know, what are all the bad things that everybody else did? That kind of gossip... We're not talking about. We're talking about one who's eager to hear about transcendental, spiritual matters. If you've got that qualification, then you must also have the qualification that you want to serve. How can you seriously, with real taste, hear about Krishna and his activities and also not want to serve him. Impossible. You know, if someone's a great cook, if you smell his cooking, you want to eat. Your stomach starts salivating, your stomach starts gurgling, and you want to eat. You can't help it. So if your senses imbibe Krishna Leela and you have a taste for it, you're not disinterested or repelled, but you actually are attracted, then how can you not want to serve him? Bhajate tadrishi krida yatshutva tatparubhavit. Krishna performs such activities that just by hearing about them, one becomes actually attracted to him and wants to be his servant. And then Shraddhadana, one should be faithful. I can hear and I can like it. I enjoy Krishna Katha, but I don't believe in it. I don't accept the Siddhanta. I got my own ideas. I have my own interpretation. Like the Mayavada interpretation. Krishna is just Saguna Brahman. He's an imperfect version of the Absolute Truth. And we use him as a stepping stone to approach the Nirguna Brahman. Now, we worship the deity, and then when we're done with that, we throw the deity away and attain Brahman. That's a misinterpretation, and there are many other misinterpretations. So one must also be faithful and understand properly and have the right attitude. Not just be attracted. There are people who are attracted, but they're sahajas or they're mayavadis. They got some attraction to hearing and chanting about Krishna, but they're still offensive. So you must be faithful. And then third qualification, mahatseva. You have to be the servant of the Vaishnavas. No way to become actually situated in hearing about Krishna with attraction if you're not a servant of the Vaishnavas. Vaishnava Chadiya Vaishnava Seva Nishtarpayi Chikeba. This is Narottam Das Thakur. Who can ever hope to be delivered if he leaves aside the service of the Vaishnavas? So Sushu Shokshada Dhanasya Mahatsevaya. We have to develop attraction to you, hearing and desire to serve. We have to become faithful devotees who don't deviate in our behavior or our ideas. The Western terminology is orthodoxy and orthopraxy. Believing the right things and doing the right things. Sounds terrible to be orthodox, but in the devotional line, that's what we have to do. We may be iconoclasts and rebels. That's okay in relationship to the material authorities. But we have to be dutiful to the spiritual authorities and be orthodox and behave, think and act the right way. That is being faithful, Shraddhadana. And then we have to we can only gain these two qualifications by being the servant of the Vaishnavas. We have disqualifications. We are ashrushu, and ashradadana. This is the nature of people in Kali Yuga, and we are people of Kali Yuga. We've got Kali Yuga in our blood, which means the tendency, strong tendency, to not want to listen, to not want to serve, and to be faithless. This is the nature of Kali Yuga, and it rubs off on us. We've been living in this age. We've been living for many lifetimes in such a polluted atmosphere. And so we are disqualified. We don't want to hear about Krishna. We don't want to serve him, and we have bad faith. Bona fide, in good faith, but we're a bona fide. We're acting and thinking in bad faith. At least I'm talking about in our condition before we get delivered by our spiritual masters. What saves us, what transforms us, is the mercy of Guru. and service to Guru and satisfying the Guru. This is the only thing that will save us in Kali Yuga. Well, to speak of any age, but especially in Kali Yuga, when we're so disqualified for any real spiritual life, we're so thoroughly disqualified to simply become attracted to hearing and chanting about Krishna. Because of our faithlessness, because of our unwillingness to be a servant and to even listen. The Vaishnava in the role of guru comes and picks us up, even if we're unwilling. He will extend his mercy to the extreme of delivering us against our will. Now, we don't want to be delivered, and still the Vaishnav forces his mercy on us. Krishna himself doesn't do this. He doesn't interfere. He thinks that he should not interfere because he has to allow the living entities their autonomy, their free will, to choose to be surrendered and faithful to him or to refuse. If he makes us be surrendered, then he's taking away our freedom. So if Krishna chooses not to interfere, if we want to be rebellious, he'll let us be rebellious, and he won't try to stop us. So he tells Arjuna, Sarva dharmam parityaja mamikam sharanam vaja. First, you give up all your other ideas, your personal concepts, and you just take shelter of me. If you do that, then aham tvam sarva papebhyo mokshayishyami. Then I promise to deliver you from all your sinful reactions. But you have to surrender to me. So Krishna is demanding full surrender, and then he gives full protection. He will not interfere. There is the statement by Krishna to Arjuna a little before that in the Gita. I've told you all the most confidential knowledge. What is it? And then he says, Vimishai tarasheshena iti te guyumakya tam guyad guyataran maya. Vimishai tarasheshena yatejasi tatakuru. So, Arjuna, and this is toward the very end of the Gita, I've revealed to you the most confidential of all knowledge. Now, you know I want you to fight, but I'm leaving the choice to you. I've told you a few things. Think about it. Vimrishaitad. Think over all of this. Yet tejasi tatakuru. And my final advice is you do what you want to do. Yatejasi. As you like, you do. I've told you a few things. Please think about them. And then you decide what to do. Prabhupada was giving a class in Honolulu in 1976. I was there. And he spoke this verse and then gave his own paraphrase of it, which is, I'm your spiritual master. I've given you good instruction. Now you decide what you want to do. I'm not going to interfere in your nonsense. That's how Prabhupada paraphrased Krishna speaking to Arjuna. But Krishna is the original spiritual master. He doesn't want to interfere if we want to be nonsense. But Krishna, you know, that if he stopped at that, then we wouldn't have much hope. Because we have a great tendency to be rebellious. If Krishna just allowed us our freedom and we went ahead and misused it like we usually do, we'd all be sitting in hell. But Krishna makes other arrangements. He won't interfere directly, but he allows and encourages his representatives to interfere. This is the purpose of Guru. The Guru is interfering on Krishna's behalf. Yeah. Interfering in our lives, telling us, don't be a nonsense, surrender to Krishna, and telling us how to do it, giving us personal guidance, not just direct basic instructions that apply to everyone. But when you take a spiritual master and you have some communication with him, he personally guides you according to your personal needs and your abilities and disabilities. This is Krishna, the
extension of Krishna's mercy. He's doing what he won't do in person. He does it through his representative. Interferes with our material life and does everything he can to destroy our material life. We should understand that that's the purpose of the spiritual master, to destroy our material life and replace it with a real spiritual life. We don't believe in spiritual life. If we did, we would be 100% eager to have it. But we're lukewarm about it. We're still holding on to material things, material, maybe not gross material things, but subtle material attachments at least. Because we're not 100% eager, we're not 100% convinced about the value of real spiritual life, or even that there is such a thing. The spiritual master, he's here to convince us, and to convince us to let go of our material nonsense. Very simple function, but crucial. Without that Vaishnav mercy, without the disciple being guided, but guided to give up his nonsense and surrender to Krishna, without that guidance, he has no hope. Yasya prasadat bhagavat prasado. By prasada means a few things. I think I've discussed this a number of times before. I tend to be very repetitious, I'm sorry. But these are important ideas. Prasada, the verb prasad, sad means to sit, but prasad means something different. The first meaning of prasad, or let's take the participle, prasanna, is clarified, cleared. Like water, a lake can get muddy because a storm shakes up the water, the mud is swirled around, it gets muddy. But when the lake is clear, when the mud settles, then you can see through the water. That's clear, prasanna. That can also be applied to the mind. The mind can be agitated and full of so many muddy ideas and emotions. But if the mind is peaceful, without disturbing emotions and disturbing thoughts, then it's clear. You can see clearly the truth when the mind is peaceful. So the first meaning of prasanna is clear. Second meaning, by simple extension, is peaceful. Third meaning is satisfied. And then fourth meaning, by extension, if when you talk about a saintly person and your relationship as the recipient of his mercy, when the guru or other sadhu is satisfied, prasanna, then that can be called his prasad. That means it turns into his grace, his mercy. A satisfied sadhu will give you his mercy. So prasada also means mercy. And that's number four. And the fifth extension is Krishna's mercy in the form of the bhoga that's been offered to him and has been transformed into his prasad. Fifth meaning of prasada or prasanna. Krishna's mercy in the form of transcendental food. But we look at number four. The satisfaction of the guru means that he will give his blessings. Why doesn't he just give his blessings without being satisfied to everybody? Why does he have to discriminate? He should, because he's representative of the Sampradaya and representative of Krishna. Krishna has some stipulations. He wants people to surrender to him. Then he gives his full mercy. The guru is supposed to help arrange that we surrender to Krishna. Not that full mercy can be given to those who don't surrender, or who half surrender. Half surrender, you get half mercy. Full surrender, full mercy you want, you have to fully surrender. So the guru is agent of that arrangement. He's not independent to change the arrangement. He has to insist the disciple follow instructions, follow some discipline. Then he can, as representative, not as independent, whimsical person, but as representative of the Sampradaya and of Krishna, then he can express his satisfaction and give his blessings. Shushusho, faithful shradhana, faithful following, Then the Vaishnava Guru, as representative of Krishna and of the disciplic succession of his predecessor's gurus, can simply feel satisfied and tell his guru and tell Krishna, this disciple is very sincere, please bless them. And then, yasya prasadad bhagavat prasada, by the pleasure of the guru, Krishna becomes pleased. If you get the mercy of the guru, then Krishna will give his mercy. Krishna is obliged to the pure devotee. Pure devotee asks for something Krishna cannot refuse. So when the guru asks Krishna to accept the service of his disciples, then Krishna has no choice. He has to accept it. When the guru, who is a pure devotee, asks Krishna, Prabhupada was describing what happens when the deities are installed. He says, the spiritual master asks Krishna, my dear sir, I admit that my disciples are imperfect, and you may not be pleased with their service, but I'm asking you, please accept that service. Please accept the service of my disciples. That's what the guru asks when he installs the deity. And Krishna has no choice. He has to accept the service. His pure devotee is asking him to. This is how indebted we have to be to the guru, to our guru, who has asked Krishna to accept our service, even though our service is not acceptable. Not for Krishna. Krishna is the Supreme Lord, the Supreme Pure. Only what is perfectly pure can be offered to Krishna. How can my service, my feeble attempts at service that are mostly polluted by my selfish intentions, how can that be offered to Krishna? Only because my spiritual masters are asking Krishna to take it. So, in very basic ways, we're obliged to the spiritual master for our being able to have any connection with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and to be able to be engaged in any way in his service is only by the prasad, the mercy of the guru. Yasya prasadad bhagavat prasado, yasya aprasadad nagati kutopi. And converse, if he's dissatisfied, if he withholds his mercy because he's not free to give it to one who's not fit, then we don't know where our destination will be. Nagati, of course you can interpret that to mean no progress, gati. But Prabhupada read it to mean we don't know where the person is going to end up. And he Prabhupada coined the word bloop to describe what happens to devotees when they leave the ISKCON association. Like a pebble falling into a lake. The Jivasol falls back into the ocean of nescience. The sound of the pebble falling is bloop. Prabhupada invented that word. Nagati kutopi, no saying, no, you can't guess what's going to happen to that person once he loses the satisfaction of the guru. So we should never do that. You know, at all costs, we should make all attempts to keep our guru satisfied with us, to be shushushu and shradadana, to be faithful followers, to listen carefully, to try to serve with eagerness, and be faithful. Hare Krishna. Okay, so any questions or comments? Yes,
Prabhu. What is the position of the Shiksha Guru and how one should be dealing with the Shiksha?
Well, basically the same kind of relationship. Guru means authority, and that we are the student of the Guru. Whether he gave us the mantra or whether he's just primarily an instructor and not giver of mantra, the relationship is basically the same. Only you can have more than one Shiksha Guru. You have one Diksha Guru, and you can have more than one Shiksha Guru, and he may be the same person or a different person. But otherwise, Guru is Guru. And then, because Shiksha Guru is more open, you may have degrees of seriousness of relationship with Shiksha Guru. Someone who gives you good advice is a kind of Shiksha Guru. So anybody who tells you some advice that's acceptable, he's a kind of Shiksha Guru. But then there's a different degrees. There's someone who you can believe, you can trust half the things he tells you. And there's someone who you're convinced you can fully be convinced of everything he tells you. Then he's Shiksha Guru in the fullest sense. But in between, the person who just doesn't know anything, but he just Krishna inspired him to say the right thing, and the person who's 100% reliable, in between that, there's a whole range of different degrees of seriousness of commitment to Shiksha Guru. So Shiksha Guru is a little different because there can be different degrees of connection, of commitment. Diksha Guru, you have to be committed. You know, Diksha Guru means you have to accept his authority. But Shiksha Guru may be, you know, half convinced, 100% convinced, or something in between. Yes?
What to do if you, for devotees that are kind of lost because they haven't, like, because they're not listening to the spiritual master, what to do?
Because why?
Like,
no, I didn't hear the reason why they're lost.
Because they're not following their spiritual master.
Okay.
How to encourage them to do?
Wow. It's very difficult because they probably decided intentionally that they don't want to follow their spiritual master. Then that person is in great danger. You have to just try to convince them that they have to, that their spiritual life depends on it. Maybe they don't know that that's what they're doing, and it just simply explaining it to them might help. But if someone has done it intentionally, rejected the authority of his guru, then he's in serious danger. You know, his spiritual life is on the rocks. It may be lost easily, and it's not much you can do to save him unless you can somehow revive that faith. So for you to intentionally undermine a disciple's faith in his guru is such a crime, because when that faith is damaged, then his spiritual life is in great danger. So we should avoid, at least, you know, we may not be able to, the damage is so severe, you know, we may not be able to do much. At least we should avoid creating such damage by our foolishness, our insensitivity, and we go around undermining the faith of disciples. At least that we shouldn't do. Repairing the faith is so hard to do that we may not have the skill to do it at all, but at least we shouldn't be going around destroying faith. Yes. And there's not much, what can you do? You can try to help.
And sometimes it seems that devotees might take initiation out of social pressure, emotional.
Yeah. That means they didn't know what they didn't really understand what they were doing when they did it.
And then later on they kind of doubt.
Well, that is not the proper procedure. Before taking initiation, a devotee should have basic education. He should know what he's getting into and understand it. Initiation should not be entered into ignorantly or whimsically.
But we should just try our best to...
Well, we should educate the devotees before they get initiated. It should be mandatory in ISKCON that everyone gets a basic education of what initiation involves.
But that's the long-term cure, but...
Well, that's right. It's not in itself complete cure either. It's just some one thing that has to be done. Well, if there is a critical mass of devotees who do have good faith, then that's a safeguard against erosion of faith. When there are devotees left who do have faith and have reason to have faith, you know, when there is real spiritual authority and there are real gurus and real disciples, then those who become bad disciples, they look, you know, they can't think that they're the norm when there's a normal body of devotees who are faithful. So that's long-term cure. Is that devotees who can develop strong faith. That's the prevention against others falling down into weak faith, is that there are devotees who do have good relationships with their spiritual masters and are following enthusiastically. then those whose faith is weak don't have much excuse to say that there's no shelter in ISKCON when you can see it all around. You know, when the shelter is actually visible, then you got to close your eyes and be intentionally blind not to see it. Still, those, you know, there are going to be people who, there are going to be those devotees who want to fall down, who want to, you know, just don't want to accept a spiritual authority, even though it's obviously, you know, real and it's obviously what will save them, but they still reject it. That's misuse of our independence. But at least if there's a body of the core of ISKCON that is strong and enthusiastic, that will be a shelter. Those who are smart will take that shelter. Yeah, sure. So you want to help the devotee who is having problem with his relationship to his guru? You make sure that your relationship with your guru is strong. That will help those who are having that problem. That was what will help them the most, is when they see that you have a good relationship with your guru and your spiritual life is on a strong foundation. That example will be what will help them the most. What you say won't make that much difference, but what you are and what you do, that will make a difference.
Thank you.
Okay, anything else? Yes, Prabhu.
Sometimes you project those gurus have many disciples, and it happens once a guru could not consider who the disciple he is. So in that case, it becomes a disappointment.
Yeah. The disciple is disappointed because the guru doesn't even remember him.
Yeah.
Okay.
And he asked, who the disciple you are?
Oh, the guru asked him, the disciple, who's the guru's disciple?
So it becomes disappointment and he wanted to...
Reject a guru?
It means he thought that I would reject guru.
I don't think in the Shastra that's a grounds for rejecting the guru, that he forgets who you are. It's just a simple mistake. It can be corrected.
Forces humility too.
Yes, forces humility on all sides. It's just not there. You know, there are authorities Krishna Bhajanamrita Narahar Sarkar tells us when we give up the guru and take another one, and that's not one of the reasons that he can't remember your name. What should he do? Just say, this is Krishna's yogamaya. I'm being tested by this, and maybe there's something wrong with my relationship with my guru that he can't even remember who I am. Maybe I'm not doing the right thing. You know, I've attracted my guru's attention so little by my service that he can't even remember my name. That maybe I'm doing something wrong. Don't blame him. You know, my service is so unattractive that my guru can't even remember who I am. That means there's something wrong with me. So that's a better way to think. Let me attract my guru's attention by more service. I have to improve my service so he'll remember what my name is. Yes, one should be sad, but the solution not should be to reject the guru, but to correct yourself. Yes, bro. Sorry, yeah, bro. Sorry.
I want to ask about this in this person which about the story of Adharu Shisyat. So why is it used this potential? Because it seems that if he is satisfied with the devotee, Krishna is obliged to accept him, to give him his mercy and his taste. But at the same time, independence. So.
Well, I think because those three qualifications are not the only ones, that there are additional requirements, and that they have to be met also. So you could say it's likely, you got a good chance, but there may be some other technicality that disqualifies you. Or delays, postpones your success. Very often we're on the right path, but we got a long way to go. Yeah, you know, we haven't gotten full mercy yet, but it'll come in the future. Because we have certain other disqualifications, you know, bad habits, bad ideas. So, therefore, syat. I don't think it means that it may not happen, but it may be delayed. Yeah. Also, sometimes the potential is used because it's one syllable. And just for the meter, sometimes it says siat instead of bhavati. Bhavishyati is three syllables, and you only have room for one, so you say siat. Sometimes it's just a grammatical trick, and it doesn't mean anything. Sometimes the potential doesn't mean anything special. Yes? Yeah, just because I do all the right things, therefore Krishna has to give me his mercy.
But
no way.
Yeah.
I did all the right things, but my attitude is bad. Therefore Krishna is not going to be satisfied with me.
And the bad attitude could be, if I'm not mistaken, the very notion that by doing the right thing, we get mercy necessarily.
Yeah, that I can buy Krishna by doing some particular things. Free.
And even though we do everything completely, properly, millions of times, millions of lifetimes, it's not guaranteed that they'll come to us.
Yes.
Sometimes we don't do anything at all, and they'll come.
Yes.
That's like he explained it all.
Yes. Yes, I mean, just like, for example, you can be granted with great difficulty, you can finally granted a U.S. visa, and then at the border, they look at you, you get something wrapped around your head, and they decide you're a terrorist, and don't let you in. Yeah. So better take your chatter off before you cross the border. Yes?
Speaking about orthodoxy, a couple of points that are, I think, are related. Orthodoxy is one of them. And
orthodoxy, orthopraxy.
Yeah, orthodoxy, orthopraxy, and then this principle, the three principles that you mentioned in the second chapter verse.
Yes.
So sometimes we see that in many places nowadays, it seems, in our movement, there's an increasing trend to neglect these three principles and to become unorthodox, but at the same time refuse to admit that that is actually occurring.
Yes.
We
need mature devotees who can insist on these principles without being fanatic and pedantic and actually attract, who can speak authoritatively because they're doing it, but still have enough compassion, enough strength of compassion that they can win over, convince those who are having trouble. We need sober, mature devotees who are faithful to have the strength to be able to convince others whose faith is weaker. By conviction, by personal conviction, example and convincing. Not convincing just by talking, but convincing by doing and by actually feeling compassion. That's the association of Vaishnavas that will change people from their erroneous ways. When Vaishnavas start going bad, then they need good association.
Because the problem is that the people in this category, they often not only don't see that there's a problem, but refuse to see that there's a problem.
Or they see the problem, the opposite problem, in everybody else but themselves.
Something like that.
Yeah.
Mm. So why are you people so uptight?
Yeah. Then you got the additional disqualification of pride in your own intelligence. That makes it very difficult. Then you don't want to listen to anybody.
It's often linked to this idea of academic advancement or even academic approach to Krishna consciousness, which seems to be an increasing trend as well.
Yes, very dangerous, because academic means critical. And it's not our style. We don't approach this knowledge critically to find fault with it. Hare Krishna. Thank you. Okay, we'll stop for now. Thank you. All glory to Srila Prabhupada, Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jaya.